Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is an interior paint and primer in one with a tough-lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint at Menards and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast. We've got a little bonus episode for you today. So as always, it's me, Ollie Lam. I'm joined by my co-host, Matt Seddon. And we've got a very special guest today. We've got Tom Gale, who's joined us. So how are you, Tom? How's it going?
Well, I'm loving that intro for a start. It's a very special guest. I'm not sure I'm quite racking up with the caliber of people you've been speaking to. No, but great to be on the pod with you guys. And yeah, I'm feeling good, man. Just pumped after a brilliant night for British Athletics.
Yeah, that's it. So obviously, like today, we're just going to do a little review of the 10K last night, the Olympic trials. Tom, like you commentate there last night, but do you just mind giving our listeners just a brief intro into kind of who you are and what you're doing and around the sport?
Sure. So I'm officially retired, but my heyday is long gone in terms of middle distance running. 151, 347, 1500 meter PBs. Sorry, 8 and 1500 meter PBs. Since then, I was a teacher. And then off the back of 2012, I was like, teaching was a bit of a grind. Not that I don't like it, you know, but I was sort of, my eyes were beginning to open to other things and the media. And to cut a long story short, I was like, right, imagine being able to interview all these athletes and get paid for it. And it's been a slow, steady journey, but effectively now I'm a freelance broadcast journalist. So I work across predominantly football, but athletics has always been my first love. Obviously do a lot of commentary, used to do a lot of commentary back in the day. It's been a while since I've been back behind the microphone from an athletics point of view, but yeah, I was part of the British Athletics stream last night alongside Alex Seftal and Will Silver medalist Hannah England.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, we'll just start off then, really. Like, Tom, how was it from kind of your perspective, like just the whole evening being there? Because obviously Matt and I watched on the stream and I guess we'll get into that in a minute, but how was it actually being there firsthand at the actual meet?
Well, I think obviously we all know, Brits know the past fortnight in terms of weather, and obviously thank God it took a turn back end of last week. And I say I don't compete anymore, but honestly, I wouldn't go as far as say goosebumps, but I was walking on the track when I arrived there. And, you know, I've done BMCs before, and it's just that vibe of like, you know, when you're in shape and you look around and it's hot and there's no wind and you're like, oh, my race is for a few hours. I was getting a bit giddy. I was like, wow, if I was running tonight, you know, and I'd done all the training as, you know, as happening previously and you had a target in mind, I definitely would have been arriving there thinking, this is it, man, you know, in terms of irrespective of, we know all the background in terms of the extensive work that goes on, the pacing that'll be there, the wave light, just the environment for the evening, full stop. And then, yeah, so basically that was from the get-go, that was the initial vibes that I was getting from it, and started with the para 1500 meters. You know, these guys took it out hard and went for it, and that just, you know, everyone was just getting after it, weren't they? And a big shout out to the pacemakers, because we'll get stuck into that, but I think that was a huge help, and Luke Gunn and all the stuff he did behind the scenes, but he just recruited some really top-notch pacemakers who, for 25 laps, you know, you want people who you can rely on. And I think every man and woman who was there last night certainly delivered on the pacing front.
Yeah, I'd second that, Tom. Like, even down to like the B and the C races, you just had perfect pacemakers. And I think all of them pretty much made the 5K required distance that they had to do, I think. And they had two pacers as well. But mate, the wave lights for me were a big factor. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised. That's why... I was surprised in the men's race that they couldn't manage to hold it. But Ollie wanted to talk about that because he reckons the conditions were too hot for a 10K.
Yeah.
I said the sun went down, but...
Because like when I was watching the stream, I think everyone just looked real tired. And I paced at a meet, the Milton Keynes BMC yesterday. And it was a bit earlier in the day, but it was pretty hot. And I wasn't sure, like, obviously you're in Birmingham, and I don't know how you felt about it, but I just watching the stream, like, I think everyone just looked a bit sluggish. Like, they looked like they were struggling quite early on. And I don't know whether it was just the fact the pace was hard, but for some of these guys, like your Mark Scotch and Mo Farahs, I don't think it should have been as hard as they were almost looking, I guess.
Yeah, I guess from my point of view, I was largely in the shade, and I certainly wasn't in any form of warm-up, but there was loads of water on supply, and it definitely was a factor. But I think, you know, again, we'll get stuck into this. I think also the pressure, you know, for example, Mark Scott, he's never been in this position before, as you know, and in the next half an hour, it literally his life will change. Of course, and this is all due respect, GB at Worlds is fantastic, but, you know, we all, as young boys and men growing up, it's the Olympics, isn't it? Or the Paralympics, if that's your bag. That's where you want to be, isn't it? And I think for maybe that was a factor, you know, weighing psychologically heavy on him, and in particular Mo as well, that he needed the standards. He was perhaps vulnerable as well. So I think he certainly, although I agree with you, it was a contributing factor. I don't think it was too decisive in terms of the amount of dropouts that we saw. I think if the heat was that significant, I think we perhaps would have seen a lot more. But yeah, I guess this is why we race, isn't it? Because there's certainly some variables, isn't it? And if you've nailed your hydration or you nailed your pacing on that day, arguably sometimes that's what gives you that little edge, isn't it?
Right, yeah, let's just go straight in and talk about the men's. We're talking about Mark Scott already and stuff. But for me, like Farah, he almost got caught in two minds. So I think he was like conscious he didn't want to go like too hard at the beginning, but obviously he did a ridiculous first lap, sort of like G'ing up the crowd and stuff. And like, that's kind of like an old Farah. Like, weirdly, I watched the 2017 World Champs back and he was doing it there. Yeah. That's like an informed Farah. And I kind of feel like he was trying to bluff himself, that he was like in, he must've known in the back of his mind what shape he was in. And, but I was so surprised that they couldn't go with that pace for longer.
Like, yeah, I spoke to Alex Haynes, who's a coach based in Loughborough beforehand, because obviously I've run a lot. Certainly 1500 meters. I know the intricacies of that, but I've never raced a 10K, and I was sort of trying to get his insight on it as someone who's raced and coached athletes to an Olympic standard to do that. And he quoted the infamous Jack Daniels quote that the race can be lost. Nothing's won in the first minute, but it can be lost. And certainly when you look at that first lap of 61, 62, even someone of Mo's caliber of, you know, the back catalogue. But when you combine it with the fact that he's not raced for a while, obviously post-race, he revealed his sort of fitness concerns. And that was the only race that you sort of thought, wow, you know, this is, you know, for everyone else, it was like, you know, the classic monotone, you know, metronome just clicking over. Whereas that one, it was like, it took him about a K just to settle down. And I think that maybe just played a lot into a lot of people's legs. And credit to those guys, certainly at the front. And Mark Scott, who we can get stuck into as well, he still finished in very respectable times. But I think that was this classic sign of early on, I think a few people just did too much, to be honest with you.
I think you're bang on, because an old Farah, like when he was experienced at champs and stuff, I know like the world stage and Olympics is different, but he was known for like never mucking the pace around, you know, and just always like he would let the East Africans do that, you know, the Kenyans and stuff. And he would just do everything very gradual. But like you said, it kind of just, well, now we can look back and be like, did he blow it in the first minute? You know, but obviously he's got his different reasons.
And then he's just different caliber, isn't he? With all due respect with Jake Smith, I think that was probably what happened to him. And you think of the difference between Mo and Jake, you know, you could argue at the moment, talent and maybe potential, it's not too far in between, is it? But you think of Mo's experience, and maybe that was what he was digging deep on before. I'm sorry, last night was, even though it hadn't gone to plan, he has such a history, doesn't he, in terms of being competitive and suffering on a 10K, on a track, in that pressure, Olympic selection, that GB vest on you, there's a European Team Cup element in it as well. But yeah, I think Farah's a huge part of it. And I think a few people, you know, the athletics community, oh, why is the big story Mo? Well, for starters, his name's Sir Mo Farah. So nationally, everyone instantly gravitates to that. And because he's a double Olympic champion, and the fact that it's looking very unlikely that when he said his best bet was going to be for that. But you guys perhaps had I don't know if you were clocking the splits, but Mark Scott at some point, I thought he was done in terms of he was off the back of that group. I saw Emil Kress leading that second group. And, you know, from a commentator point of view, I'm looking straight at the front. I saw Emil Kress go back and I thought, wow, if Mark Scott doesn't even make the top two in this, so how the hell he pulled that sort of last 600 out is just a credit to all his hard work that he's put in, because no one flukes a 27.10, do they? But again, he was under pressure and he came up big. I don't know what you think, Ollie, in terms of his like last 600 meters.
For sure. I think, like with Markle, obviously he's gone into this with a slightly different mindset to everyone else, because he's the only one who didn't actually need the time at all. So for him, like, I think it's obviously a successful evening. I think he mentioned on his Instagram that maybe obviously he'd have liked to compete more at the front of that race anyway, like particularly the form he's been in. But I mean, that was almost what I wanted to get into this bit later, but I guess it's a good time to chat about now as well. Like, just for me, the stream and the coverage, like it being a European 10K Cup almost took away from that British Tramps Olympic qualifying, just because of the way the coverage was with it. Like, it was just hard to pay attention to the British race as soon as the kind of the foreign athletes were running away with it almost. And it was like a great race by them at the front, but obviously from a British perspective, it's hard to keep track of that when you just don't really know what's going on, and people are kicking for seventh and eighth rather than up at the front, which is kind of what we expected.
Yeah, and I hear you. But I think on paper, I think many people predicted it was, you know, Abdi, Mo and Scott to sort of fight out, you know. And again, I understand what you're saying about that European Cup element. But obviously, I think a lot of the, you know, because those first three all ran Olympic times as well. So it wasn't as though they were just focused on European Cup. I'm sure they saw it as a huge opportunity. But just those stakes, isn't it? And like I say, and again, I can't speak from experience, but you must go through so many bad patches in a 10K and 25 laps. And I've ran 10K on the road. I don't think I've enjoyed it, but you can soldier through. But, you know, like you say, if a couple of Ks of just real struggling and graft just to stick in there, if you're not in Mo, I saw some of Mo's quotes. He said he was feeling it from 15 laps out. And he's just like, wow. You know, so again, credit to both Mo and Mark for respectable finishes. But as you talked about, Ollie, equally for Mark and the fact that potentially he was looking out the door in terms of Olympic selection, but he came and did what he needed to do. And there's no hanging on for selectors' opinions or anything like that, is it? He knows that he can now fully focus on preparing for Tokyo.
Yeah, yeah. And a 5K for him as well, which I think is the next thing. So I guess it's nice for him to not have to worry now. It's just straight to the 5. But I think, I just wonder how different it would have been if it had just been an all-British race, I guess. I don't know. It's probably a worse chance to get the time, but then
maybe I think that was the thing. I think they needed that environment to set the pace. I don't think, you know, despite the great runs by the Brits, if you'd imagine if it was Emil, Mo and Mark at the front, they're not going to be forced. Well, one person's going to try and force it, unfortunately, and that it's going to be to their detriment, isn't it? And I think this is just the way it goes now, isn't it? Certainly in terms of chasing times and over 25 laps, I think you do need to have that depth in and around you. We're not fortunate to say, for example, like a Stanford meet where we can have 25 Americans of similar ability. We don't quite have that levels yet, but the fact that, you know, it's similar situation for most of Europe, isn't it? That's why this event is so popular, is because they can't replicate. If you look at all the, obviously in the research, a lot of the athletes have done their 10K championships a few weeks before, and you know, the times are like 29 minutes, you know, high 28 sort of thing. So it shows how tough it is to sort of, in a, you know, a domestic championship perspective, to replicate that sort of quality.
Mm. Yeah, I think the same. And credit to Farah. Like, we've obviously followed him for years, but from my personal perspective, that was the best interview he'd given after like a race ever for me. You know, even when he's won races, but he was just so, I don't know, it was just almost like a different Farah to what we've heard previously, I think. Like, he didn't moan once. He didn't complain once. And even when Farah's won races, you know, he's moaned about stuff in the past. And yeah, he was just like, you know, that's our sport. That's the way it goes. And unfortunately, I don't know, he was mentioning he was going to try and find another 10K. But like we just spoke upon then, are you going to find another 10K of that level with lights, perfect evening? There was guys in the race that he could have tagged onto and chased. You know, Bashir made that move at some point. So I'm not sure when it was, like 3K to go or wherever they started closing on the Frenchman. But, you know, will Farah find another race like that before the Olympics?
I think there's a couple, isn't there? And obviously, you know, him and his camp know the true extent to, you know, what his fitness is like. And I think one of the big things to ask is that he was going for gold, wasn't he, in Tokyo? This is not Mo just saying, with all due respect, I want to qualify. You know, I'm stepping away from the marathon because I don't think I can match the previous highs of the track. On the roads, the track, I'd legitimately see myself as being a three-time Olympian. And if, with all due respect, and of course, this is just my opinion, if he's not getting anywhere near 27, 28, how he can expect to, you know, to be challenging for a gold medal. And, you know, time's running out, isn't it? It's going to be Tokyo, it's going to be coming up on his extremely quickly. And those are the questions, I guess, he's got to debate. And like I say, maybe with a bit more rest. And as you've rightly pointed out there, Matt, credit to him to showing up, because this is an issue British athletics have had historically, haven't they? Sometimes they rightfully protect the big guns, don't they? And say, you know, you don't have to come, you as long as you prove form. Well, that was another thing for Mo, was it, that he hadn't raced in close to 4 years on the track, isn't it? So even in, despite his, all those accolades, it'd be really a tough pull to sort of justify selecting him if he hadn't run a 10K on the track.
Yeah, I mean, you look at his competition. What Kiplimo ran 26:33 the other day. 5K on his own, you know, the last 5K on his own. It's mental. So I think, I don't know if we're hearing more from Farah, but I would love to see him actually try and go and qualify, because he might stand more of a chance if he has, then he qualifies, he has another 5-6 weeks to prepare. But I think I'm with you on this, Tom. He's up against it.
Sorry, I'll go, mate.
Yeah, just with it being Farah, I almost think, like you mentioned, kind of his camp and his team. Like, I think if he wants to have a crack at the time and there's not a race, I think they'll manage to set one up for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like potentially how like the Bowmans did last year, like with their kind of COVID season. I think they probably got the resources to go and do that. But I think it's just whether he thinks, like you say, whether he thinks it's actually worth it. And
well, and also because obviously he complained about the niggle that he has. He's just ran 25 laps on that. And I think if that was a Mo with already been the time in the bag, if he wasn't feeling it after, you know, if he's feeling his leg after 10 laps, he probably understandably just stepped aside, wasn't he? So again, the next 24, 48 hours are going to be crucial, aren't they, in terms of whether or not he actually may have made it worse in terms of terms of that. So
what was amazing is the fact that Mark Scott was, what, 3 or 4 seconds behind Farah on the last lap? And what amazed me was that Farah didn't manage to hold on to that and win. But I think Mark Scott must have just, because did a mill come past him, Tom?
So he did, for a number of laps, he effectively dropped back to, he sort of went out the back door of that lead group, and they just got swallowed up. And at one point, honestly, his form was just completely gone.
Really?
I think, again, you talked about, Ollie, about the depth of, again, that probably helped Mark Scott. If that was him in a domestic race, he would have been in no man's land. But I think he, you know, this is me reading between the lines. I couldn't watch it blow by blow, but I'm assuming he probably sat in with that group, started to feel a bit better, give himself a chance, and maybe Emil going past him was that kick up the backside to, you know, I'm not saying he wasn't committed on that Olympic berth, but like literally, and I think that gets stuck into this, into the girls' race as well, the fact that you can see that Olympic qualification, someone else moving away from you, you know, sometimes people can easily crumble for that. And credit to Mark Scott, he sort of said, right, you know, all this training, all this sacrifice, all those 100 miles a week or whatever it is, this is where it counts, isn't it? I don't have to push the boat out in terms of trying to chase the time. Hang in with these guys and give myself a chance with 400 or 500 meters to go.
Yeah, for sure. I think, like, yeah, just the point I was making is just I'd have loved to see that guy, I guess, on the stream rather than having to, like, obviously it was great, like, having you guys on the commentary because you were, like, talking us through it, but, like, we didn't really see it until the last 50 meters.
Yeah.
So I guess that's my only thing with the having all British races, you get kind of what's actually happening in the front of that domestic race itself. But I definitely agree, like, with, I think, yeah, probably did help him a lot having.
And Emil Caress as well, that's another great story that we probably get stuck into. Because I don't know if people were aware, and hopefully we did explain in the commentary that it was just quicker than Olympic pace at the front, the wave life, but there was always that wave light. There's that second one, which was just the wave light. So there wasn't a designated pacer that was bang on 28 minutes. And Emil was at the front of that group for so long. And then he started to struggle a bit. And he no doubt benefited for having just such a high quality feel behind him. But I understand I saw him speaking to Athletics Weekly, he had COVID 10 weeks ago. Yeah. So what a turnaround that is.
That was another great interview as well, actually. Like, just kind of him being quite open and honest. Like, he just, I think he mentioned that, like, yeah, he's been in what he thought was, like, really good shape before, and he just hasn't been able to kind of replicate in a race. And this time he almost just, like, went for it and had a go after, I guess, some not the ideal build-up, like you say, having COVID 10 weeks ago, and he's just smashed it. And hopefully, I guess, that's where, like, the Commonwealth Games, I guess, is a great competition, is that people like that hopefully get picked off the back of running that time, and that acts as a really big stepping stone to hopefully that in 3 years' time he'll be able to start running those sorts of Olympic standards as well.
And I think Mo's, you know, he's been a great role model for a number of years, and I'm not trying to tempt fate, but if this is the end of Mo, and, you know, Mark Scott, I'm not saying he's capable of being a double-double Olympic champion, but he's shown on the stateside that he can compete at the front end of races. That'll drag Emil Kares come through. Jake Smith, tough learning curve for him last night, but I'm sure he'll get some form of a standard for those Commonwealth Games, if not the 5K still potentially this year. And, you know, again, we're coming, Paris will come around awfully quick. And you think Emil Kares in particular, that he's 27.50 man now in 3 years' time. And I understand he's not recently had the new coaching set up with Alan Story as well. You know, those sort of continuous competing at that level, training at that level, competing at that intensity. Wow, yeah, just, you know, he's just, again, I'm not sure we'll ever replicate the success of Mo, but he's definitely been a huge plus in terms of just showing British vests on a men's side that you can run these times, you can get in finals, and, you know, hopefully we can maybe just get some form of a success in terms of those World and Olympics and in the not too near future.
Yeah, I think Farah summed it up perfectly as well, because I think even after the race, he said, you know, 10 years ago, he didn't think it was possible to get amongst it and do what he'd done in the sport. And so, like you said, Tom, he's shown that, you know, they can do it. And I think the whole of British athletics in general, every athlete out there is believing they can get amongst the world stage more and more.
And let's not forget how it all began with Mo, was that the double at the Europeans in 2010. So, you know, I think a lot of the time, he was probably long overdue. But the fact he did a double at a Europeans, you know, that was inevitably the springboard for the debut the following year. And you look at someone like Mark Scott, you think, well, if it was just and I know it's got a bit skewed now with Olympics in the same year as the Europeans and whether they saw that calendar out, but he's someone legitimately who next European champs could be thinking, well, I could win the 10 and the 5, couldn't I? And you know, who knows who, you know, who's another Andy Vernon this time? Is that Emil Kares who's challenging Mark Scott this time? So, yeah, that's what we want to see, isn't it? We've seen it evidently very much so on the women's side in terms of longer distances. Hopefully now the men can, that next gen can come through and kick on.
Yeah. That's it. I think let's talk about that women's race, because I guess we've spoken about how the men's was almost billed as the men should be at the front of this and winning it. And I guess the women delivered on that sense. Like, we had a pack of four British girls for a long time working together. And just like, it was so good just to see so many British vests and doing so well up the front.
Yeah, it went. I think Ailish was arguably the out and out favourite, wasn't it? But I'm not sure if you heard me on comms. I was getting quite anxious for just, you know, from just for a British point of view, that, you know, Ailish just had to just stay there, didn't she? She's top two, you know, just, and that's all, because not to say she didn't want to run fast, but, you know, she still got at least another 10K at a minimum, hasn't she, in her, in terms of that Tokyo one. So it was about doing as little as possible, getting a good run out, but I don't need to, you know, redline this at all. I just need to just try and do my best. And the wheels on those two girls over that last K is just a credit to it. I think that was probably, I don't know if you know, particularly, and then everyone who had success last night, the sort of negative splitting, you know, whether it was from 7K, I think the Italian Reaver in the B race, he went from 3K out, a few people, it was a little bit different than there, but Ailish, and I think we all knew Ailish was going to go. I just didn't maybe think that Jess had that gear to go with it. And how it turned out was Jess was the one who went on the front foot, and Ailish probably thought, okay, I can do with that. And probably Jess, knowing that at some point Ailish would come past her, would just continue to drive her. And the tears at the finish line, boys, honestly, like Hannah England, we went to get her. And, you know, this is what us, me and mortals can't relate to. Yes, I've trained hard and tried to be the best I can. But we think about Jesse's journey in terms of this prodigious talent, you know what we're like in this sport. We're obsessed with youngsters who run quick. We want to hang medals straight around the neck. From 159 as a teenager, and she's had her struggles, hasn't she? And many have understandably stepped aside because the spotlight becomes too intense and everyone's over scrutinizing performances. And she's just found her own way, hasn't she? And she just burst into tears. And that, you know, that just visible seeing something where you've put all that work in. And the beauty of the Olympic trials all is where, you know, if you deliver and that selection says top two, if you do that, all your dreams are just there. And it was no surprise just to see the emotion pouring out of Jess and likewise Hannah, because she's been there. She went to London 2012. She knows that emotion of that high pressure trial, doing what you needed to do, and then you're knowing that that's it, you're now an Olympian.
Yeah, that's, and it's almost like hard to believe that Jess wasn't before. You talk about her being like such a prestigious talent. Like it's almost crazy to think that she hasn't actually been to an Olympics yet. And I think she put up a tweet. It was just about how she was almost just a bit too young in 2012, and then 2016 she had like her injury issues. And that's the thing of the Olympics, it comes around every 4 years, and the fact that you'd almost been in the shape to go, or like have the ability to go at two prior, and you don't make it, that this one I guess must feel even more special. And just even I guess Matt, we spoke to Steph 12 a couple of weeks ago, and it's almost a similar story about like moving up in the events as well. Obviously Jess hadn't actually gone, but like it's almost a pure distance runner, I guess, your classic progression, like being world class as an 800, and now she's going for the 10k, and I guess vying for the 5 as well.
Yeah, mate. What I like about Jess is she's almost gone. I think that her emotions came out yesterday as well, because she's done like a full circle. Mm-hmm. You know, like she started out with her dad, being coached and just doing it for the pure love. And the way she used to race was just like that pure grit determination. And she obviously had her rocky patches in the mid-teens. And then now she's just back with her dad and just back grinding, and it's just paid off. The wave light was interesting for me yesterday, because they held some nerve, those girls. I think you were even saying on the commentary.
I think that's what I mean. It was me as an anxious runner, and maybe like you say, with 8 and 15, you feel as though you have to be on it from the get-go, don't you? But that ability and that self-assuredness to think that, and we talked about Mo, and this is, I'm not saying he was chasing a time, but he's evident of how much those pace ramps up in the closing mile of races. And I think that's the thing. I think they always were giving themselves a chance, but you know, me as my insecurities, I'd be thinking, well, make that chance 2 to 3 seconds. I think it was close to double figures at the time in terms of how far they were off it. But undoubtedly, the lap markers started to play a role, didn't they? That the fact that you weren't just chasing, you know, empty space. And Safari, I think, you know, to her credit, she kept going, didn't she? You know, if maybe she came back to the group sooner, they may would have settled at a slower pace and just tried to duke out before. But because the Israeli was, you know, maintaining her side of the bargain in terms of keeping that pace honest, that, you know, 31:10-ish sort of thing, that undoubtedly helped. But I think a great advert for any youngster, well, even if you want to know how to run a 10K, how much, if we compare it, and I don't want to pick out anyone in that men's A race in terms of, if their last lap would have been a 61 or 62, as opposed to doing the first lap where those girls in the A race, 75s, yes, it may be slowed 6, 7K to 70, 60, 77s, but they could always give them chance to finish a lot stronger than doing it the reverse way, going out hard, hanging on and having very little kick at the end.
I think, like you mentioned that, Teferi didn't really slow, did she? I didn't actually see her last 800, but she didn't slow. It was just, and like fair play to her, because she ran a lot of the race on her own, but I guess it was just that, I guess what, we had the four Brits for quite a while, and then it was just Verity Ockerden, Jess Judd and Ailish. Jess and Ailish just managed to completely like turn the burners on.
And Verity, I think, was very open and honest in her interview, wasn't it? That she didn't have that belief that she could be that far off the pace and still give herself a chance. And that was to her detriment. But again, these girls are still, Ailish is far from old, but she's so much more experienced in terms of, you know, she's still learning the 10K, but that Olympic pressure and Team GB, this is regular treaded terrain for her, isn't it? But for Verity, I think she just said, she was quite open and honest in saying, you know, this was my first chance of realizing that Olympic dream. And I got a little bit too scared of not getting the time. And maybe if she would have executed a similar plan to Jess and Ailish. And Ailish now, three-time Olympian over three different disciplines, which is just incredible. So I think, what do you make of just her whole, you know, she has that thing with her mum, doesn't she? That, you know, I'm sure she welcomes it, but everyone always is going to talk about her mum, aren't they? And yeah. I think, you know, if my dad was whatever, I'd be crumbling all of that. But not only can she carry the McColgan tag, but she's treading her own path, isn't she? And just showing what an excellent racer she is. Because this is what it's all about, isn't it? Medals. And I'm not hanging any Tokyo medals around her neck, but she shows that she can compete in very high caliber fields.
But that's it. And like she's moved up distances from obviously the steeple and then like the 5 and the 10. And I presume she's going to try and double 5 and 10 this year. But a 15 time this year as well is crazy good. And it's so exciting to see. Like, and it's exciting that it's not just Ailish on her own doing that. It was exciting that so many of the other British girls were with her for so long. And I think it's just, it's just so exciting for Brits right now, just being in and around distance running. But it's definitely our strongest event as a nation, and I just can't wait to see what they do, really. But yeah, like Ailish for sure, like over the past 10 years now, she's really just become truly world class. It's no longer the case that it's about making British teams, it's about making British teams and then going and competing on the world stage as well.
And I think we said, what, you may be lucky to get one Olympics. And I'm not saying that she was a passenger in London or Rio, but again, going into Tokyo now with all that learning experience and exposure to that environment. I know Tokyo is going to be quite different in terms of, it's going to be obviously awfully sterile, isn't it, in terms of that similar experience, but she knows high pressure elite sport, doesn't she? And she's once again delivered when the pressure was on.
Yeah, I think it's interesting you say it. I almost think Tokyo, for the people who've been before, I don't know if it will make much of a difference to them. I don't know. Obviously, it's hard to put myself in their shoes, but I almost think that they've experienced the excitement of just going to the Olympics, and that now it's almost not just another race, but it's we're going there to do business. So regardless of how many fans are there or how much buzz there is around the village or anything like that, it's almost going to be, let's just turn up to the track, and we don't need to be sad that there's not like a crazy buzz around it or anything like that. They can just go and get it done. So it might be to the people who've been before, it might actually be almost a positive.
Yeah, but it's interesting because I think Rio was a little bit like that as well. In the fact
it was
that
the Zika virus, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and when you spoke to a couple people who was their first Olympics, they were kind of like, it's not what, and I think we even spoke to Steph 12 about it, didn't we, Ollie?
Yeah.
When she went to 2008, it was just incredible, you know, mm-hmm. And it's like what you dream as a kid, you know, the Olympics to be just unbelievable hype, fans everywhere, you know, and I think 2016 was a little bit toned down from that. So I think it will affect people differently. And I think Ollie's bang on in just saying like the more experienced ones, like when you look at the Laura Muirs and the Ailishes, they're there to do a job now. Mm-hmm. Like they want one thing, and that's to get a gold medal or get a medal as such.
Well, Matt, I'm sure your brother will testify to this. And to, you know, no champs is the same, is it? You know, there was nightmare stories about Athens, wasn't there, in terms of stuff not being finished, and the contrast to Sydney, which was on a par with Beijing in terms of the organisation and committee. But ultimately, you know, no one wants to hear excuses come final time, don't they? So again, that is maybe if your times are not there, is that how you chunk back, you know, claw back some of that advantage of in terms of your preparation? Because I was Hannah England, she's quite extensively involved with European athletics, and she was on a webinar and she was talking to a international field event coach, and he was saying, well, Tokyo is normally it's rain season during then, and all his hammer throwers have been preparing to throw in the rain. So it's those sort of, you know, the whole 1%ers, isn't it? Yes, you've got to be in shape. Yes, you've got to have ran the time. You've got to be in a significant part of the rankings. But on the day, someone who can cope with a lack of crowd or that, like you say, that almost sterile feeling of turn up, go to the hotel, track, back to the hotel, back. None of this, you know, socializing, none of the whole stories about infamous about the buffet, hooking up, you know, apparently the Olympics can be a bit of a sex fest, can it? You know, that's how these things, you know, all that sort of stuff, you know, park it to the side, isn't it? That for this games, you treat it how it is in a pandemic age. And the sooner people get their heads around that, you think that it would give them the best opportunity of, you know, doing the business, I guess.
Yeah. It almost reminds me, I remember reading about when Centro won in 2016, like how, so he flew his family out and they stayed in a house outside of the village, I'm pretty sure. And he literally just went, did his training and acted like it was normal and didn't kind of appreciate it for an Olympic game just as a championship. And I'm going in to win. And I guess it's going to be like that for a lot of people now. There aren't going to be those distractions, like you say. But I think just the fact that you mentioned about the preparation, like maybe for the rain or for the heat or however it is, people like Ailish who went into yesterday probably not having to be in tip-top shape, like peaking for it. Whereas you can contrast that to someone like I don't want to like name names because like, I don't know the ins and outs of their training, but people who are going in and they need to run the time last night or in the next 30 days, say, they got to be peaking now rather than peaking for Tokyo. Whereas I'm sure Ailish's program has been peaking for Tokyo and we'll just try and get through the British qualification as easy as possible on the way. And like I think the difference that makes to when you actually go to the champs is huge, because I think a lot of people, if you're on your limit going into the trials, and I guess this will be the same like for when we see our bulk trials at the end of this month, some people are going to have to be in the shape of their life to make the team, let alone thinking ahead already. Whereas I'm sure some of our top athletes, maybe even Mark Scott, probably is, I guess, with Jerry Schumacher, he's already thinking of the actual Olympics rather than the qualification last night in terms of his preparation.
Yeah, I guess the dream for everyone is get the time early doors, isn't it? You know, out in a Stanford or wherever, March, April time, tick that box, get back into a block of training, then tail off for the trials, then go back into your... But to each their own, isn't it? You know, for those experienced ones like Eilish, with all due respect, she expected to be at Tokyo, didn't she? I'm sure Jess Judd did have a hope of... she had a good shot of being at Tokyo. But, you know, let's pay respect to all the coaches and the backroom staff that, you know, they would have anticipated, wouldn't they? They would have been, if this goes to plan, this is how we structure training. Yes, of course, sometimes someone runs a time in an event and you structure things slightly differently. But I don't know, Matt, again, I'm just trying to relay from your brother in terms of how you approach a season, isn't it? There's always that, I guess you'd want to be prepared for every scenario, not suddenly reacting and think, oh God. And don't get me wrong, it probably has happened before, is it? Oh no, I'm actually within the shot of the Olympics and maybe playing catch up.
Yep.
The coach has always got some underwriting principles of belief of how it'll fluctuate through a season in terms of the intense time when you come off the gas. And now how do we go about in that, whatever, 6 to 8 weeks before a major champs, how do we go about rediscovering your best form?
I think it's more mental as well. You know, so much of it is mental. Is if you start banking on that you're going to the games, and you almost get comfortable and settle, then I think, you know, stuff creeps up on you. And like you say, then you start running the risk of, and I think that was what happened a little bit with Mark Scott, you know, last night. Is he kind of went there yesterday knowing that, you know, okay, even if Farah beats me, that's not an upset or anything like that. You know, Farah wins, that's by the form book. I've just got to come top two here and I'm going to the Olympic Games. And that probably was crossing Mark Scott's mind at what 8K when he was, you know, really struggling. But he knew in the back of his head, well, I just got to stay here and come second. You know, it took Emil to overtake him for him to sort of be like, damn, my Olympic dreams are slipping away. So I think it was always going to be like hard for someone like Mark in that race, and similar with Eilish as well. Like when in the back of your mind, you know, you're capable of doing the job. Yeah, I think it just takes the edge off of race day.
And I think if you would have said to, I don't know Mark Scott, but if you would have told Mark Scott, you got to run 27:40. Or something like that, he would have been like, yeah, okay, no yeah. sweat, you know. But again, I think you can't legislate for this sort of, and again, if fans would have been there last night, unfortunately, that was a huge downside in terms of how much, you know, that maybe would have helped Mo on, and likewise when Mark was struggling as well, because that, you know, everyone had a significant other, but, you know, we've seen the glorious scenes of the night of the 10Ks where you got people in lane three, literally lane three, barking at you and stuff. And maybe that would, because that's the thing, you know, every race is so unique at times, isn't it? And
Mo just would love the crowd.
Yeah. And who knows what it would have rallied and brought out of him, but it was what it was, wasn't it? And like you say, irrespective of whatever we debate about it, you know, it's great to talk about it. Mark Scott is an Olympian, isn't he? And that's what, at the very minimum, if you would have told him, whatever, you run 26:30 or 29:30 and you're still Olympian, he said he would have said either way, just give me that Olympic berth.
Yeah, 100%. And that's it, like, you got to think it was a successful night. Like, it was a massively successful night for a lot of Brits, and like we saw three people qualify. So I guess there's still a few more spots, and I guess comes back to what we were talking about earlier, whether other people actually try and get some times in between now.
Yeah, a huge shout out to Luke Gunn and the University of Birmingham staff and their liaisons with British Athletics and European Athletics to even make it happen. You know, we're all in our own lives, don't we? You know how things are so difficult in COVID. Unfortunately, the German team couldn't travel over, could they? Or bar one athlete who actually smashed his PB as well. So, you know, there was all that thing even before it got going, didn't it? They had to set the stage in terms of, we know athletes are alive and they'll arrive fit, but we need to ensure that everyone's COVID secure, the track's in great shape and the track looked fantastic. Mm-hmm. The wave light was all in place. The paces were absolutely bob on. And then, you know, that's the hard work, isn't it? That's what athletes want and expect, isn't it? You know, now you just show up and do your thing. And, you know, from the para race to the men's C race through to those A races, it was just a great night of athletics.
Yeah, huge shout out to Luke Gunn and the university, because once again, stellar meet, wasn't it? And I wonder if they'll get anything off the back of that. I think it's going to go back to Highgate next year though, isn't it, Tom?
I think that's the plan, but you know, how can we predict any what the last 18 months has told us, as you've got to have a contingency for everything, isn't it? And whether it's Is that a 5K festival or just an elite meeting, isn't it? You know, and the great work the BMC do, but just another different environment, another different feel. It's great to have other options, isn't it, throughout the country. And Luke would have learned a lot, wouldn't he, in terms of, you know, that he's doing great work with the university scene there and the open meets that they're putting on there. He'll now have the confidence to approach, you know, sponsors or event organisers to say, you know, have you ever considered Birmingham for that? Because we now have a template. Look at the results. It works. And yeah, which again is just another huge tick for domestic athletics.
Well, I wonder if like the continental tours, like really, you know, grown this year, I think. And, you know, you see it before all these European meets, which are kind of like low key tracks, but there's just a buzz. Mm-hmm. To me, like Birmingham just fits that bill. Like I would love to see, you know, we're good enough in the UK to host like a European meet, but a smaller one, you know, we don't need to just host a huge Diamond League all the time. A small one, like a distance one or whatever. Like you saw Hengelo today, a fairly low key small track. I think in Belgium, similar as well. You know, Birmingham would be ideal for somewhere like that for me.
And it's all credit to those behind the scenes. If you look at Mark Hookway and the work he did with the Twilight meme, which seems like a lifetime ago, but you know, it was only 2019 and all the work that they put into that. And athletes arrived in shape and they had some big, big results, didn't they? So it's unfortunately, this is where athletics sort of shoots itself in the foot a lot, isn't it? We're still so reliant on volunteers and that spirit, which was epitomized last night, wasn't it? You know, this is the endurance community coming together and support. And I, with all due respect, I don't think those pacers got paid extensively, did they? But they all wanted to be part of setting up a great night and hopefully, you know, securing Olympic spots for people, wasn't it? And it's sort of that difficult juxtaposition of trying to do some things ultra professionally but still relying on that core amateur element that is the life breed of our sport.
Yeah, for sure. I think anyway, like I guess just like time to wrap up really, I think. But like, I guess just what you said there, Tom, is just perfect way to describe the evening. Like it was just fantastic way of showcasing talent and also showcasing the type of meets we can put on that aren't necessarily reliant on big money and on big kind of foreign like things like the Diamond League and things like that. So it was just excellent, really. And then I guess massive congratulations to Mark, Ailish and Jess booking their also spots. And then fingers crossed for other people trying to vie for that Tenki team as well, because hopefully we can take a somewhat of a full team.
Well, Sam Aitken wasn't there and he's running standards. So, you know, he might get picked now.
I think he just sets it. It's just perfect. Warm up, if for want of a better word, those, you know, the proper national champs in terms of the rest of the events that set an example, didn't it? The draw, you know, it is just, it's so weird, isn't it? Just when, as soon as you attach Olympic to it, just it automatically brings, so there's, unfortunately, there's going to be tears, isn't there, for some people. There's some events, we haven't got time to get into that now, they're ultra stacked, aren't they? And someone's going to miss out. And likewise, someone will break through, won't they? We never saw it coming. And then someone who has maybe been on the bubble for years, maybe a Jess Judd, finally they get that payday. So yeah, that last weekend in June is just going to be fascinating.
I think, Tom, you've summed it up there perfectly. When it's the Olympics, you know, like you say, you see tears, you just see huge contrast in emotions, you know, the complete elation at the end of the race for some, and, you know, the almost like the complete disappointment, which shouldn't be a disappointment if you just miss out, but just naturally being elite athletes, it is. And I think that was what's shone through so well last night.
Yeah, for sure. Right, thanks very much, Tom, for your help with this, and thanks guys for listening as well.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.